thanks so much. It's Bill Luff. It's Judy Pilak. Judy's sitting in for Wendy. Wendy has a couple of days off for the holidays. Alexander Zalbin is our guest. He's the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website, Decider.com. He comes on with us every Friday, and we talk about television. Alex, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good to talk to you guys. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Alex.
Alex, you know Judy, right? I think you guys have spoken once or twice in the past.
I feel like we have been on together before.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. Before we get to the major stories, I just want to mention two names. We lost two notable names from the world of show business and entertainment this week. One was Stan Lee. One was Roy Clark. You tell me, Alex, did he have as much impact on television, Stan Lee, as he did on comics and on movies?
You know, he had an impact on everything. One of our writers, Brett White, wrote a fantastic piece about how we wouldn't have the current pop culture landscape, not just comics, not just movies, but everything without Stan Lee. And I think that's absolutely true, not just in terms of the actual content of things, though, of course, everything in a certain way is informed by comic book media, and that a lot of that was created by Stan Lee, but also just, but I mean this in the best sense, but the huckster way that he approached everything, talking things up, coming up with catchphrases like Excelsior, that's, you can trace that DNA down into reality TV, WWE, even, frankly, politics and the way that people approach them. And a lot of that does go back to Stan Lee. So in a certain way, he had an influence on absolutely everything that we do.
Yeah, I have younger kids, you know, it's 20-ish, and they all know Stan Lee.
Sure.
Everyone knows Stan Lee, and that to me is a testament to the greatness and, you know, what you did with your life.
Yep. We did a poll on the show, Alex, the day after Stan Lee died, saying who in our lifetime has had more impact on pop culture than Stan Lee. So the one name everybody came up with immediately was Walt Disney, and it's hard to argue that anyone has ever been more influential about pop culture than Walt Disney. But Stan Lee's the guy who you probably wouldn't think of right away if you were making that list, but once somebody mentioned his name, you'd go, of course, Stan Lee, of course.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Disney is also, it's the brand, so I think it's out there a little more versus it's not Stan Lee, it's Marvel. And even for most of his life, for most of the second half of his life, he wasn't specifically at Marvel, he was just associated with Marvel. But people all over the world recognize Spider-Man, they recognize Wolverine even, all of these different Marvel characters. It's funny, this might be a little inside baseball, but I used to hear from some friends at Marvel who worked on ads for the website, and they would say that if they put up any sort of character as an ad on the website, you know, people would click through at a regular rate.
Right.
But you put up Spider-Man there, it was about 5 to 10 times the rate of anything else. Just people see Spider-Man and they're immediately drawn to it. And you have to, of course, give credit to the artist, Jack Kirby, who worked with Stan Lee on it. But he was so crucial in making a character that so many people identify with on a deep, basic gut level. It's incredible.
Well, one of our criteria for coming up with the top 10 was, even if you're not into a particular franchise or company or idea, if you're walking down the street and you just don't know anything about comic books but see Spider-Man on a hat or a t-shirt or a lunchbox, you're going to know it's Spider-Man or Wolverine or the Fantastic Four or Iron Man. You'll know it.
Yeah. And it's changed over time as well. It's funny, I just started watching the Marvel movies with my kids. And for me growing up, it was always, oh, I love Thor. You know, I was never quite into Captain America, but he was certainly around. The X-Men I love. Spider-Man was definitely my character. They flipped out about Iron Man. They were so excited about Iron Man and seeing Iron Man in the movies. That's all they wanted to see. And that's changed. That's different. That's because of the Marvel movies. These things change over time. But again, it goes back to a testament of how indelible these characters are that they created that will last forever at this point.
Yep, no question about that. So yesterday we find out that Roy Clark had passed away. Roy Clark was one of the hosts of a show called Hee Haw for years and years and years. Made other TV appearances, but probably best known for Hee Haw. What's his legacy? How will people remember him, do you think?
You know, honestly, it's tough with something like that, with a Hee Haw that hasn't had a revival necessarily.
Yeah.
I think for older viewers, huge, and that was a huge part of the landscape and a huge part of the culture. And of course, Roy Clark was a big part of that. But nowadays, I think a lot of younger viewers just don't necessarily know it. Maybe down the road, you know, we'll have some sort of revival in terms of older TV like that, and certainly I hope so. And certainly you can search out clips and check for old episodes of Hee Haw. But if anything, it's more, I think, in the format of it,
sure,
in mixing the country music and the comedy that really has lasted through the culture.
Well, it's funny. Yesterday, upon reflecting on Hee Haw, and for younger people, you'll have no idea what it was like, but it was Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In', but countrified. They did everything they did on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In', but they made kind of a down-home version of it, and it worked. I mean, people, it was syndicated for years.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you wouldn't have a lot of the more, and I mean this again in a very nice sense, but the more southern networks like Country Music Channel and things like that being able to do a mix of that, I think, without Hee Haw.
True. So true. All right, let's talk a couple of other events coming up. One of them is the Coen brothers, two of the greatest filmmakers of our generation. One of their movies is in Netflix, but it's kind of a strange way of getting there. Please explain.
It is. It's out today on Netflix. It's called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and it actually started and was shot as a TV series, and then they changed their minds and instead made it into a very long movie. So it's still very episodic. It plays like an anthology. Like a lot of the more recent Coen stuff, it's literally a Western. Like, it's not even a modern riff on a Western. It's a Western. But the cast is fantastic. You got Tim Blake Nelson. You got James Franco, Liam Neeson, Tom Waits, Zoe Kazan. I could go on forever. It's because of the anthology nature, reviewers have found it to be a little bit of a mixed bag. Some of them are better than others, but like with any Coen Brothers movie, it's worth seeing.
How long is it?
That's a good question. I don't actually have a sense of the length, but certainly you're going to probably want to take a couple of breaks while you're watching it, I think.
It's that long.
But yeah. I got to tell you, I want to watch this tonight.
Oh, yeah.
That's how excited I am.
Love the Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
Their stuff's great. We'll take a little break and then come back more with Alex Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. If you want to jump in with a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. Spill Left, it's Judy Pilak. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. We're talking television with Alex, obviously. Alex, Ben Stiller has directed a TV series on Showtime. What is it about?
So this is called Escape from Dannemora, and if you're expecting it to be a laugh a minute, it decidedly is not. It premieres on Showtime, 10 p.m. on Sunday, and it's based on a real-life prison break that happened in 2015. Just a couple of episodes, I believe it's about six, but the cast is fantastic. Benicio del Toro, Patricia Arquette, Paul Dano is in it, as well as a couple of others. And it is a slightly more serious take. And in fact, Ben Stiller has said going forward, that's where he wants to put his focus. I personally haven't seen it, but our editor-in-chief, Mark Graham, did get to check out the first episode at a screening the other day and said it was superb, very well filmed, really well acted. It's definitely something that come next year will probably be an Emmy consideration.
I'm not surprised. Ben Stiller is a great comedian, but he also seems to be a pretty bright guy, a good storyteller, so it all makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the direction he's been heading in anyway. I mean, honestly, he hasn't done a broad comedy, I think, in years at this point.
Yeah.
Most of his stuff, even if it was funnier, had more serious notes to it.
I think Night at the Museum was a drama, wasn't it? I'm trying to remember laughing during that.
It was a drama to watch it, that's for sure.
Maybe. What is the Kominsky Method? This is a Netflix show, and that's all I know about it. What's it about?
Yeah, so that is out today, actually, the full season. This is created by Chuck Lorre, who you probably know best for The Big Bang Theory and other shows like that. This is not a comedy, though. It's very serious, or relatively serious, I guess, for Chuck Lorre. It stars Michael Douglas. He's an acting coach. Alan Arkin is the co-star as an agent and friend. And it's sort of just a reflection on Hollywood. Our reviewers who took a look at it, Josh Sorokatch, really liked it a lot and was very surprised by it. And certainly, if you are a fan of Big Bang Theory, don't look for broad, funny laughs like that. I guess we're just in the age of funny people trying to be serious.
I have to confess, I keep a list in my head, a very short list of people I will watch anything in, and Alan Arkin is on that list. If he's in something, I'm watching it.
Yeah, he's great, and the cast is really good in it. Normally, to be perfectly honest, I'm not a huge fan of the Chuck Lorre shows, but yeah, I'm really curious to check this one out.
Last week, Alex, I talked to you about Roseanne, and I said, I know that that first episode back of Roseanne without her on it when it became the Conners was a big deal because everybody wanted to see how they would handle Roseanne not being in Roseanne anymore as they switched over. Now we find out from the website Decider.com that the Conners is the biggest new comedy of the fall. Please explain.
Yeah, so this is, again, from one of our writers, Brett White. He's an enormous sitcom fan, and he's really been enjoying the Conners. But he was curious to see, actually based on a lot of our conversations, how well it was doing. So he crunched the numbers, and it's pretty deep, and I definitely recommend you search it out on the website because he has cool graphs he put together and everything. But comparing it to almost anything on TV, the Conners, frankly, is a big hit. Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon are number one. And over the long run, it looks like Mom is also beating it.
Yeah.
But the Conners comes right after that in ratings. Now, the little asterisk there is they've only had a couple of episodes of the Conners at this point. But still, it's the biggest ABC comedy. It's the biggest of the revival comedies. It's one of the biggest new, quote-unquote, shows of the fall. And also, which I thought was very interesting that he crunched, he took a look at the ratings over time for Roseanne and how they fed into the ratings for the Conners. And they are lower, but they're not much lower. They kind of show an average decline from that high, high that Roseanne premiered at. It was slowly trickling down anyway, and Conners continues that path versus sharply dropping off. So all things said, that's pretty good for the future of the show.
Now, but do you think the popularity is due to people still kind of just being, you know, curious, or is it a good show?
Here's what I would guess, and obviously we don't live in this timeline, but I think if the show was not that great, or if people were only checking it out in terms of curiosity, you would have seen that big first week, which did have, and then an immediate huge drop-off. Instead, we're seeing a gradual decline, which is something that happens to absolutely every single show on broadcast TV. Usually you see a big premiere, a little bit of a dip, things go up if there's a big, buzzy episode, but mostly they stay down until the end of the season. And that's exactly what's happening with Conners, which means people are actually watching it and, I think, enjoying it.
So it must be pretty solid.
Yeah,
you would think.
I think so. I think it's there for the long run.
Alex, speaking of revivals, I watched Murphy Brown last week. I had seen a half an episode a while ago, and then I watched the full episode last week. And I'm curious, there was a character on the old show that was my favorite character. It was the newsman Jim Dial, played by an actor named Charles Kimbrough. Everybody else who's still alive came back for the revival, but he's not in it. He's not been mentioned. Do you know something I don't know? Why wouldn't he do it?
I think he is supposed to come back, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I haven't necessarily kept up with the show, but I believe he's going to make, according to one article that I found, just a few brief visits, quote-unquote, on Murphy Brown. Certainly they've tried to make it as faithful to the old show as possible,
yeah.
So I can't guarantee it, but I would say stay tuned. He's probably going to show up.
It makes sense. HBO has their first non-English language series premiering this weekend on Sunday. It's called My Brilliant Friend. I've seen the promos for it. It looks really interesting.
Yeah,
what
I was really interested
it looks
in
good,
this one,
doesn't
too.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, so this is getting the prime Sunday night at 9 p.m. slot on HBO, so you know it's something they have a lot of faith in. Like you guys said, it is the first non-English language series, so don't expect you can just, you know, turn it on and kind of tune out a little bit. You'll actually have to do some reading.
Yeah.
But it's based on the best-selling novel. One of our writers here, Megan O'Keefe, gave it a watch, and generally she found it pretty good. It's really beautifully filmed, apparently. It's definitely very slow, but honestly, that happens with a lot of HBO series. I feel like that first episode is a climb, and then you just got to stick with it and see where it goes.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you about one more. This is an AMC series, The Little Drummer Girl. I've seen the book. I've not read the book yet, but this is John Le Carré. If you like his stuff, you know, this sounds like a perfect show to watch. What do you know about it, Little Drummer Girl?
Well, the thing that I think is really interesting about it, there was a miniseries starring Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie, The Night Manager, which was another John le Carré adaptation last year, and people love that. Instead of directly following up on that, they're doing another adaptation of another book that's not necessarily connected, which, frankly, I think is pretty smart. The cool things about it, it's directed by Park Chan-wook, who directed Old Boy and The Handmaiden, mm-hmm. For fans of foreign cinema. It stars Florence Pugh, who's definitely bumping up as a huge star right now, Alexander Skarsgård, Michael Shannon, and it's great. If you like Night Manager or you like John le Carré, you're into sort of spy, tricky shows with a little bit of politics injected into them, definitely check it out.
I'm in it for Skarsgård.
And it's Michael Shannon for me. I get Skarsgård, but Michael Shannon...
I really like him.
He petrifies me. Anytime he's a good guy or a bad guy, he scares me. I love him. It sounds like a lot of good stuff coming up, Alex. Everything you mentioned sounds interesting to me.
Listen, if you don't get caught up with it, luckily Thanksgiving has come up soon. You can watch some serious comedies and some spy thrillers with your family when you're home.
Why not? Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. Have a great holiday, Alex. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, you too. Thanks so much.
Take care. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and there's more show. News is next. It's Bill and Judy in for Wendy on WGN.